This is the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for a new episode of Kings of the Podcast. Buckle up, here we go!
Welcome back, Kings of the Podcast, episode 156, coming to you from the heart of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But Dennis, there's no heart left in the hockey fans of Los Angeles. Their hearts were ripped out. I just came up with that, by the way. Their hearts were ripped out in a six-game series by the Edmonton Oilers in back-to-back seasons. The Kings just have not had luck against the Edmonton Oilers historically, Dennis. It was the Smythe division all over again. It's been dark days here in Los Angeles for a couple of days. How are you holding up here now in the middle of the second round of the playoffs?
I'm doing fine. You know, it's not just the Kings that Leon Draisaitl pulverized, right? And he's taken no prisoners in the next round as well, even though they win. Doing great. You know what the shame of it is, John? When I watch these teams play, and I look who's remaining in the playoffs. There's no team that the Kings couldn't have beat. There really isn't. There's not this, you know, Boston goes out, Colorado goes out. That's the shame of it, is that, and granted, they're probably not as good as Edmonton. I watch these other teams. They could have beat any of these teams, so it's unfortunate. Feel for the fans losing a couple of home games there and getting eliminated on home ice in game six, but you got to press forward and look towards next season now.
Wait, the Kings are not as good as the Oilers? Is that what you just said? Did you slip that in?
Yeah, they're not.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. Okay, that's an interesting take. I want to give you an interesting statistic that one of the Mayor's Manor photographers, Augie, gave this one to me the other day. I don't know if he came up with it on his own or where he picked it up, but it's pretty fascinating. You go back to the early 2000s, DB, every team that has eliminated the Kings from the playoffs has either gone on to at least the conference final, if not to the Stanley Cup final. So you go back to 2001 and 2002 when they lost to Colorado. You go back to the team. And the only exception, by the way, is the 2010 Vancouver Canucks. But you go to the Sharks in 2011. You go on to Vegas. You go on to Edmonton. Right. You look at all of these teams. I think that streak is about to be broken because on the fourth period where we have to give our fear, we don't have to, but we choose to give our fear, I guess. I mean, maybe we have to, or Dave's going to come to our house and hurt us. You know, but anyway, we give our fearless predictions, Dennis, and I did have Vegas beating the Oilers. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because the first thing I do, I've told you this before, for those that don't know, Dennis and I never compare notes before we do predictions. It's no fun if we compare notes. So the first thing I do when Dave publishes on the fourth period our predictions, I quickly go and I want to compare. Well, what did I take versus what did Dennis take so that I know if there's going to be any good arguments. And then this was boring, Dennis. We both took Vegas in six games, so there wasn't a lot of fun there. And then you have the Dallas and Seattle Kraken series. You took Dallas in six. I took Dallas in six, so there wasn't a lot going on there. And so then I always start in the Western Conference, by the way.
Then I went
to the Eastern Conference. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of intriguing. I took the Devils in seven, and you have Carolina in six. So that was interesting. We can talk about that. And then, of course, I had to go to the Toronto series, and I said, what's going to happen there? It says here, Dennis Bernstein, Maple Leafs in six. Hovind has the Panthers in seven. So, obviously, I'm feeling much better about my Panthers pick than you are about your Leafs pick. But let's talk about the Devils and the Canes. It's once again Carolina kind of flying below the radar. It's not a sexy series. What are you thinking here? How are you feeling about the Devils and the Canes?
Well, going back to October, I picked the Canes to win the Cup over Colorado. If they play that way in game one, the rest of the way, they'll win the cup. Like, they got depth scoring. They smothered the Devils. And granted, the Devils are coming off seven-game series against the Rangers, a very emotional win. But they smothered. I think they had, what, two shots on goal halfway through the game. Like, that's Carolina Hurricanes hockey. And at some point, my concern is, John, at some point you need a star player to take over and have a big game. They don't really have that in Carolina. And I'm waiting for Freddie Anderson to get hurt, too, because that always happens in the playoffs. So, you know, and then Rant will get it. They'll probably get down to the third-string goalie by the time they get to the conference final. That was a very convincing win. I expect a lot better from the Devils in game two. Jesper Bratt really hasn't done anything for them, who's a big-time scorer, 30-goal scorer for them. So I was a little surprised at the length of the victory. But remember, Devils' first two games against the Rangers lost 5-1. They lost 5-1 again, so they're holding to the script. But again, Carolina was really good. They played Carolina Hurricanes hockey in game one.
Well, I do have the Devils, as I just said, in that series in seven games. The reason I thought, or one of the reasons I thought that series might go a little bit longer, was what you just referred to, which is the fact that the Devils were coming off of a really long emotional playoff series against a crosstown rival. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get going when you're coming out of that. Now, you don't ever want to take time in the playoffs because every game matters. However, the one thing that we've seen throughout these playoffs this year, and I referenced it on the last podcast, Dennis, and I just can't get over how it continues. The road record.
Unbelievable.
It's so wild. Home ice no longer exists. If you're playing on the road, you're more likely to win than if you're playing at home. It just makes no sense. The world's gone mad, Dennis.
That's why the Leafs are going to win the series. They're going to win the next four, right? Exactly.
Okay, well, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know. But it's been insane, John. It just shows there's not a lot to separate these teams. Whoever plays better is going to win. It's as simple as that. So, yeah, but it's stunning, the outcome, with respect to the record of how many road teams have won, how many road teams have come from behind in games. Home ice is, you know, for the Leafs, you got to get out of Scotiabank Arena. Like, that, you don't play well there. You just maybe play all the rest of your games on the road. It's just they don't play well there. The crowd really doesn't help them much. But it's been stunning how many road teams have won in this first two rounds. You're absolutely right.
What we know is this, Dennis. If we've learned anything in the playoffs, not only this season, but pretty much every season, stop telling me about what happens after if you win or lose the first two games or whatever. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, the Toronto-Florida series is not over, so I'm not taking a victory lap. Yes, no. Toronto is down two games. There's still five more games to play, and as we're talking about here, road teams have success here. So the series is a long way from over. I'll save the victory lap in case the Panthers do find a way to sweep them. We'll come on and do a different podcast. But I think there's a lot of hockey left to be played in that series. And the other thing too, Dennis, is it certainly feels like, and we've heard coaches talk about this over the last maybe 5 years. I don't really remember it going back 10 years ago during the Cup era for the Kings. But really in the last 5 years or so, coaches talk a lot about there's no momentum from one game to another. Yeah. It's like seven individual games. It certainly felt like, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there were momentum swings in a series that once a team sort of started getting on a roll, even if they dropped the game, they really had the quote unquote momentum in the series. And you just don't see that anymore. Teams can't even hold on to momentum within a game, let alone within a series. That's weird to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of parity and there's a lot of talent, John. Is that you can come, you have enough scoring talent. It's not 3-2 league anymore, Daryl. Sorry, Daryl, it's not. That's why you're probably not coaching anymore. But you can be down multiple goals, like you saw in game four, LA, Edmonton, and come back from league. There's no lead is safe, and no deficit is too big at this point in time. I just think it's a more talented league where, and I think the offenses are more up tempo. There's more like willingness to go on the rush. And that's what I see from with respect to the play right now is that it's so unpredictable that when you're up 2-0 in the first period, like let's say the Leafs were, it's no guarantee. It really isn't. You got to play a full 60, John. I think that's it. I think a lot of these teams, maybe some of them experienced, they took their gas off the foot off their gas and then went up behind or in a tie game. And then, you know, it's a bounce here or there and you wind up losing in overtime like the Dallas game against Seattle in game one.
Yeah. Tab, your buddy from Chicago, he took Seattle in seven in that series. Eddie Lack took took Seattle in seven. Other than that, everybody's in on Dallas. I mean, I can't see Seattle making it out of the second round, but who knows? Stranger things have happened. Dennis, you mentioned Daryl Sutter. I didn't have him on the agenda that we talked about before we hit the record button, but I do want to give a little mention here on Daryl.
Sure.
Daryl continues to be one of the most complex individuals in the game of hockey. I always reference that initial conversation that I had with Dean Lombardi where he said, I remember being at the hotel before the press conference and him saying, hey, he's not the guy you think he is. And here's the thing. He wasn't the guy we thought he was, and I'll still say this. He's still not the guy that most people think he is, and here's what I want to say. I'm not trying to throw dirt on the guy, Dennis, but I do think that more people need to wise up to the fact that Daryl, on certain days and in certain ways, he's not a nice guy. And Brown took the heat for a long time. Mm-hmm. He ruined Dustin's life. He made Dustin's life miserable in many, many ways. And you know what? I was thinking about this earlier today. Some of these players in Calgary that had put in trade requests, and now that Daryl's been fired and they've rescinded their trade requests, and I'm thinking about how Daryl really did a lot of damage to the Calgary Flames, and you look at guys that have left and look at Tkachuk now being in Florida and look at Johnny Hockey and the success that he was having and he's gone now. You know what? You know what I was thinking about today, Dennis, was the statue outside of Staples Center. Dustin Brown really got the last laugh in all of that. There were several years of hell that Dustin has always chosen to take the high road on, and he's never really talked about it. Even on the surface level, he's never really talked about it. Dennis, it's not like he hasn't gone deep. He really has taken the high road. But you know what? Good things do happen to good people, and Dustin Brown has a gigantic statue outside of the arena. He really got the last laugh in the whole thing.
Yeah, and you saw Daryl's, and you know that guys like Nas Kadri and Uber that came in signed long-term deals, they want him. And you saw Alan Walsh, and you know, a couple months ago when Uberdale was up against it playing on the third line, he said there's too much negativity. And is anybody shocked about that, John? No, no one. Those tactics are done. It's over. It's 2023. These players don't respond. They're making too much money. They have too much power. It just doesn't work anymore. If you had a bunch of fourth line pluggers all making minimum, Would he work? Yep, but that's not this league. Imagine him coaching Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Imagine that combination, John.
But here's the funny thing, though, Dennis. I also think about Drew Doughty, because I've said this forever. Drew thrived under Daryl. He needed that father figure. He needed that tough love. For some players, it works so well, and it's just a fascinating case study how, as a leader, as a manager, he almost seems incapable of pushing different buttons. And so the buttons that he pushes really work with some guys. And for other guys, they don't work at all. And then that player becomes, you know, enemy number one to Daryl. And that's just so unfair. It kind of pisses me off the treatment that some of these players get under coaches like that. And then I know right now, Dennis, so get ready on Twitter. I know that some of the listeners are going to be like, oh, but we love Daryl because we love those press conferences. And Mayer, he brought two Stanley Cups. Again, that's what I'm talking about here, Dennis, is that there are so many faces, so many sides to the complex story. You give Daryl praise for certain things. But I think if you're being fair and honest and equal, you have to, I don't know what the right word is to be heavy enough on it, right? But if it's the opposite of praise, if you're praising him for this, you do really have to punish him. People can't see my hands for this, for the other side of the scale, because it's heavy on the other side of the scale too.
Yeah. And people outside of Los Angeles have asked me about that. I'm like, look, here's the deal. He should have been coached for life here. He should have been a lifer. If he'd only taken his foot off the gas pedal on the players and not been the negative grinding player. You won championships here. Why would you have your foot all the way down the pedal and say, hey, look, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he's a playoff coach. The team was built for the playoffs. He never took the foot off the gas pedal. He could still be coaching here, but it's a situation where it's just that style just doesn't work. And I agree with everything you said here. Just he's a great tactician, but just his tactics don't work anymore in this league.
Let me ask you $1 million question, or at least a $5 million question then, Dennis. At the exit interviews this week, the question came up, will Coach Todd McClellan be back? I thought it was almost an inappropriate question, in my opinion. Yes, he's going to be back. There would be no reason for him not to be back. But okay, fine. The question was asked, and general manager Rob Blake confirmed, yes, he will be back. And then later, Todd McClellan was asked by you about the interest in an extension. I found his answer to be very interesting, Dennis. I don't know if you did, and I know it's, you know, we're reading between the lines, and sometimes we shouldn't do that, and we always talk about the word context here, but it kind of sounded to me like he'd be just fine without an extension. He's like, I've kind of enjoyed my time here, and what happens, happens. And, you know, it didn't sound like somebody who at least was lobbying, and maybe that's just not his style, but he wasn't giving any sort of indications. But here's my point, Dennis. Is Todd McClellan the guy who can get the Kings over the hump in the playoffs? And I ask that because you just mentioned about Daryl being a playoff coach. Is Todd a playoff coach? Is part of the problem for the LA Kings the adjustments or lack of adjustments in the playoffs the last 2 years, your opinion?
Well, I think coming into the – you talk about over the hump, John. Is Pete DeBoer a guy that could get his team over the hump? Because every time he gets on a new team, they go deep. They don't win a Stanley Cup. So what's over the hump? And I think coming into the playoffs, 2 of 16 coaches won a cup. And one was Bednar in Colorado. He got knocked out in the first round. I can't recall the other one at this point. John Cooper. So both guys went out in the first round. So what's over the hump to you, John? Is it getting to a conference final? Is it winning the cup? Is it getting to a cup final? Tell me, like, because this nebulous term about over the hump, and please – The five fans that keep going off about 2014, like, are you kidding? Like, nobody, it has no bearing on it. I think you keep going.
Wait, hold on. What about 2014? Because I am not plugged in. What are they banging on about 2014?
About how they played San Jose and Todd was the coach in San Jose and he lost.
It's irrelevant. It has nothing to do with the situation.
Well, Todd McClellan's a loser because we beat him in 2014 in four straight. Okay. That's what you hear. Like, you see, nope. And people like you, like, I could list six players who have progressed and emerged under him, and that's what you want. So right now in the moment, I don't know if he's the guy that's going to win a championship here. But I know he's done a really good job. He's done the job they asked him to do when he came in. He put in structure. Guys emerged. Like, Adrian Kempe was a 14-goal scorer. Like, and now he's a 40-goal dangerous elite scorer. Vilardi has emerged. Like, Phil Deneau became a much more better offensive player. I could go down. Mikey Anderson became a top pair defenseman. Matt Roy, a seventh round pick, became a top four defenseman. So stop with this stuff about should he go or not go. I don't know, John. I really don't know. I think the team needs to be incrementally better on paper before I can say he can't put him over the top. Do I think this, and you and I may disagree with this, do I think this is a championship roster? I don't. Do I think that they had a legitimate shot to get out of the West this year? I absolutely do. And if you're a Kings fan, you should be disappointed about that because you look at the teams remaining, and I get it, Connor and Leon and the power play. But I don't know. But do I think he deserves an extension? Yeah. When you give me – add one or two more players to this team. Like, if Gavrikov leaves, you got a problem. Add one more player up front. And then if he can't win a couple of rounds, then – but so what, do I think a five-year extension like he got – you know, a five-year deal beforehand? No, I don't think so. A shorter-term extension, 2-3 years, I get it. I don't know. But there's so many coaches out there like that. Like, how many coaches didn't make the playoffs that won a cup? Sullivan, Laviolette, Berube, should they be fired because they couldn't get their team over? I don't know. But in the moment, he's the right guy. It's TBD whether he gets them over the hump. And again, I want to know what that hump means to people. Is it a championship or less?
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there, DB, so I appreciate you speaking your piece there. So let me react to a couple of things there. Getting over the hump to me in this particular isolated case means the ability to get them a win in a playoff series. However, I want to be very clear about this, Dennis. If the Kings had beaten the Oilers and gone into the second round and then lost in the second round, as far as I'm concerned, the same questions exist. So while it's more fun as a fan to go 4, 5, 7 more games in the playoffs, the team is really no better off by having gone through that other round. I mean, short of experience, but what I'm saying is from a question standpoint, I would have the same questions in 2 weeks from now, if they were eliminated in 2 weeks from now, instead of being already eliminated, that I have today. And those questions that I have circle back to why you were saying this isn't a championship roster. This roster is close, but to me, this roster is not complete. And so just because they would have won five more playoff games, to me, doesn't mean they're any closer. They still have to solve for the left D on the second pair. Can they get Gavrikov signed? We can get into that. They still have to solve the goaltending problem. Is that with Korpisalo? Is it with somebody else? What the hell do they do with Peterson? What's going on with Phoenix Copley? There, you know, there's a lot to talk about there. What's going on with the Gabe contract? We can get into that. How much money are they going to have left over? Hey, Dennis, here's the big thing. Put all of that aside. How many defensemen are going to get traded off of this roster to make room for players next year? Everyone keeps saying Brant Clark is on the NHL roster. Really? Show me how Brant Clark is on the NHL roster on opening night, because you're going to have to trade at least two defensemen, Dennis, to really make that happen. And you most likely are going to have to move three defensemen at some point. So there's a lot of trades that have to happen from a salary cap perspective in order to get Gabe signed, in order to get Gavrikov signed. There are also trades that have to happen to get Clark on the roster, to get Spence on the roster. They have a lot of roster manipulation to do this summer that they still would have had to do even if they won a second round is what I'm saying, right? So here's the thing 100%. About Todd. Here's the thing. You said it's TBD. I would say it's TBD as well for this reason. I don't think he's the biggest problem that they have. So if I'm going after, like, from a priority standpoint, I don't look at the coaching staff and go, you need to start with the coaching staff, because I would just turn that question a different way. Are you telling me that if you take this exact same roster and come back next year and run it back, that a different coach is going to help this team get, and I'm going to use that phrase, over the hump and pass the first round into the second round? Okay, well, great. But if that coach can't win you the Stanley Cup, then you just moved the chairs around on the deck. You didn't really do anything. So for people that don't like Todd, hell, I don't like all of his decisions, Dennis. How many times have I said, hey, why is this guy starting on that line? I think Arthur Kaliev should have had a bigger role in the power play. I think he should have played more this year. You know, I understand the reasons to put Byfield up on the top line and try to get him some experience. But at the end of the day, you really needed him back more at the 3C than you did up there. So, I mean, we could go through the whole litany of decisions. But the reality is this, Dennis. 104 points and two people are primarily responsible or deserve a lot of the credit at the very least. Rob Blake and Todd McClellan. Rob Blake was the mastermind, was the architect that decided how they were going to go through the rebuild, reimagine, recreation process, right? They bring in Phil Deneau. Rob Blake won the summer two summers ago. They also brought in Arvidsson that summer. The team went through progression that following season, and McClellan was behind the bench, putting the structure in, doing a lot of those things. Then you come back the following summer. They landed the biggest fish that was out there in Kevin Fiala. They signed him to a long-term deal, and the team was, again, they progressed this year with 104 points. But I don't care if they had 104 points or 111 points or 182 points. Dennis, it doesn't matter. Unless you win the Stanley Cup. So is this team, like, if they had 101 points, do they get off a little bit easier? If they had 109 points this year, should the pressure be on a little bit more? No.
No.
The pressure, to me, is the pressure. The pressure they're under right now to make the right roster decisions, to me, would have been the same pressure had they won five more games, had they had five more points in the regular season. It doesn't matter. It's about progression. And so all of that washes away the minute the season ends. I wish Todd really had more of an outlook like he did at the end of last year, where when they were eliminated, he's like, well, back in the office tomorrow and the work begins. It should be the same mantra right now. Hey, it sucks. It sucks they lost. I'm sorry, fans. I know that you guys wanted more games. I know that playoff hockey is exciting. I know you play 82 regular season games just to play in the playoffs. I know that it's annoying to lose to the Oilers. You know what, though? Back to the office, back to work. Now the real fun begins. How are you going to fix the defense? How are you going to fix the goaltending? How are you going to fix the penalty kill? To me, those are all of the things that people should be focused on right now. It's not focused on, well, they need to replace Todd McClellan. That doesn't make the top 10 list, Dennis.
No, and here's another reason why. Like, I talked about the emergence of some players, John. And the other thing is the comments by Kopitar and Doughty at the exit interviews about Drew's avowing vengeance on the Edmonton Oilers. Right now, for next season, he wants to beat them worse than anything. And Kopitar says, "Yeah, I want to sign an extension here." So the leaders in the room certainly have bought into Todd. They certainly aren't pissed off by him. They can work with him. So that's the thing. There's been emergence by players I've already mentioned, and the leadership can work with him, has grasped and assimilated what he's put in. So those are the reasons. Like, if you don't have emergence from players, or you don't have buy-in from your leadership, your senior players, then fine, then go. But that's not occurring. And they had the second best record in franchise history for a regular season. Yeah,
so I love what someone things, said. Did the players tune out Todd? When did that happen? They had a 104-point season.
Unbelievable.
When did they tune them out?
Okay. Some fans. Yeah. So look, I get it. Some fans, there's a faction of fans that don't like Todd McClellan. I get it. Like, I'm not, you or me, whatever I can say and blue in the face is not going to offend him. He's a loser. He's never going to win, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I could give you 20 coaches that, you know, I mentioned DeBoer. I could mention a ton of coaches who are really, Gerard Gallant. He's never won. So, you know, I could go down a list of six other coaches who have, you know, haven't won. Are they bad coaches? Do they want, now they want to fire Gallant? Some fans want him gone in New York because he lost in seven to the Devils. So again, I think you got to move on. He's not going anywhere. Look, the ultimate goal is to win a Stanley Cup. And I think next year, that's why, John, next year is so pivotal. We talked about the last two summers being pivotal. Next season is so pivotal because you're right. You know what? If you go out in one and you go out in one round, then it's not acceptable. Then you got to look at some legitimate changes, because if you think you're good enough to get deeper in the playoffs and you don't, then there's something systemically a problem with this team.
This team, I'll say this right now, you can reference back. This team will be better next year than they were this year. They will be. Whether they score 104 or accumulate 104 points is irrelevant, right? Because that's all seasonal, dependent upon other teams and things like that. The team will be better. They'll be better equipped to go deeper in the playoffs. They will be closer to a championship roster than they are today. This team, this roster, will be better next year. I guarantee it. How they get there is still to be determined, but I guarantee that this roster is going to be better, not only because of the maturation of some of the players and some of the acquisitions that they'll make, but this roster will be better. So Dennis, let's get into that. Let's talk a little bit about that. I also want to get, you mentioned Kopitar. I want to give Kopitar some praise for the comments that he's tried to get out there about Adrian Kempe. Kopitar is not a cheerleader, so he's not going to be very boisterous about this. But when you talk to Anjay, he says important things if people are listening. And what he has tried to say quite a bit over the last month is, Adrian Kempe has not only had an offensive explosion over the last 2 years, but he's a better defensive player. He's an all-around player. Kopi can't stop praising Adrian Kempe, and he keeps trying to tell everybody, stop praising him for his goals. That's cool, but praise him for being an all-around player, because he has turned into a dominant force. And you know what I really liked about Kempe in the playoffs, Dennis? He was the go-to guy. When they needed a big goal, they got it from Adrian Kempe. He was the guy that stirred the drink in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and Kobe said to me privately, Adrian has not gotten enough credit all season on his work on the other side of the puck, number one. Number two, with Kempe. And Kempe's very visible now, John. Like, sometimes the room's open, there's only one or two guys. Adrian talks a lot now, and that wasn't the case a couple of seasons ago. He's a true leader. He's not wearing an A, and, you know, you could talk about who deserves a letter in the future, like Mikey Anderson or whatever. But he's a locker room leader now. And because he's a go-to guy, he has that responsibility that these players now, he's not a kid anymore. Players look up to him. Like, the young
And he
players
said
look up
that also, Dennis. He said that in the exit interview too. He pointed out to the fact, he goes, hey, look, 11 and 8 are not going to be here forever. And I know that someone needs to take leadership. So it's like the leadership team, the management team that's been saying this the last couple of years, they have finally made inroads into his brain, and he gets it and he understands it. I'm not saying he didn't before, but I'm saying he bought in, is what I'm saying. And he recognizes that, and he relishes that leadership opportunity. He doesn't run from it. So it's been an all encompassing thing, right? The leadership, the defense, the offense, the aggressiveness. Yeah. What a hell of a player, Dennis, he's really turned into.
Yeah, he's been a clutch player for them all the way through the season. Like, you're right, in a big spot, he delivers for them, and that's what clutch defines.
All right, so that's the first line. Second line, Deneau, I remember we talked about progression versus regression at the exit interviews last year with Phil. Phil, this time around, he did have a career year offensively. It was sort of lost in the ether of all of the accolades being thrown at Kevin Fiala, justifiably, right? But Phil Deneau had a fine season. Arvidsson had a coming out party. I think the situation with Arvidsson is an interesting one, Dennis, because when the Kings go looking for money, and we can briefly touch on this, and then we'll do more on this later in a different episode, because we want to complete our sort of postseason mortem before we go into the summertime off-season stuff that we can talk about. Yeah, and the off-season stuff that we'll talk about over the next couple of weeks on the podcast. But there really are three contracts. Let's just get right to it. There are three contracts the Kings can go after, four if you include Cal Peterson, but three contracts among the forwards. You have Victor Arvidsson, who's going into the final year of his deal, making a little bit north of $4 million. You have Trevor Moore at $4 million now, recently signed, and you have Alex Iafallo. Two of those players are a little bit redundant. I know McClellan would take exception to that, but Iafallo and Moore are a little bit redundant in terms of what they bring to the team. And it's not a negative, Dennis. They're both solid players. Arvidsson really almost defined different things that he brought to the team in the playoffs. He elevated his status to where 6 months ago, I probably would have said, you know, I think they're probably going to have to move Victor Arvidsson over the summer, just because he's going into the final year of his deal, and they're not going to probably sign him to an extension because kids are coming to take those spots and they need the money now, not in a year from now. So that's probably where they would go. But then I sit there and I look at Iafallo's deal and I look at Trevor Moore's deal, and those two players are redundant. And so if you go look at those three all at around $4 million, if you had to get rid of one, all of a sudden Arvidsson's probably not the odd man out, because if you get rid of one of Moore or you get rid of Iafallo, then you have two different players that are left, Arvidsson and one of those two players. And these decisions are tough, Dennis. I know there are fans out there listening to this that are going to be very upset. You know, no, you have to keep Iafallo. No, you have to keep Trevor Moore. Well, guys, you can't keep everybody because, oh, by the way, there's a guy number 13 named Gabe Vilardi who's a restricted free agent this year, and the Kings are going to have to do something. It's probably I tweeted this out quite some time ago, Dennis, when somebody had asked, well, what do you think the contract's going to look like? I said, well, I think it's probably going to be a bridge deal, probably in the two to three year neighborhood for about $4 million. Now, if he wants to sign a long-term extension, then, you know, the money might look a little bit different, but probably for the Kings, given where they are from a cap perspective, they probably would be okay with the bridge deal, similar to what they did with Toffoli back in the day, to allow some cap money to free up down the road and then give him a bigger payday. Well, if you're going to be giving Gabe a bigger contract, Dennis, you're going to have to get the money from somewhere. So any thoughts there on the whole triad of $4 million players in Arvidsson, Moore, and Iafallo?
Well, Arvidsson's a playmaker. You can't trade. Now, there's sometimes, John, what I would do is I let him play out his deal and make the decision at the end of next season. I don't think you have to do anything with him. With respect to Vilardi's deal, bridge deal. Because, John, he, you know, one season, you're going to pay him off for one season? I wouldn't. I'd play a one-year, two-year deal. You know, qualify him. He's an unrestricted free agent. He's a restricted free agent with arbitration rights.
Yeah, can't come to say he has arb rights.
Yeah, he has arb rights. I would just arbitrate. If he goes to arbitration, you take your chances.
I don't know, Dennis. Not these days anymore, man. I don't know if I take my chances in arbitration.
What do you have, 23 goals? I like what? 1 year, 23 goals? What's that going to get you? $4 or $5 million? I guess.
From an arbitrator? You could get six.
No.
Dennis, look at what these guys are getting. Anyway, make your point. No. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No.
Go ahead.
No, you're not interrupting. No. So, yeah, I think if you want to change some structure to the depth chart, you would have to move, and I would move Iafallo. That would be the player I would move, because I just – Trevor Moore, I think, just – I like his two-way play a little bit. But, now, look, Iafallo scored big goals in the playoffs. So, and it depends, like, what are you going to do? Yeah. I know it made the decision harder, which is a good thing to do. Or do you just, again, I think it's a question, John, not like who goes, but how much of this team do you run back? Like, how many changes do you need to make this team better? And that's the question. And it involves, I think it's all TBD, because you don't know what's going to happen with Gavrikov. Because if Gavrikov goes to Mark and you lose him, then you got to find two left defensemen probably. I know you love Bjornfoot and you think he should play more. I don't think so. I think he's a 7th D on this team.
He's way better than a 7th D, but that's fine. Even it doesn't matter. But Dennis, you're talking about a third pairing D, so it doesn't matter whether you're talking about him or somebody else. To get a third pairing D, you're talking about $1 million. So I'm not that worried about it. The big issue on left D is if 84 walks and you have to then replace him, you need to have the assets to be able to do that. But so let's go back to the forwards, though.
Sure.
To me, I think it's Trevor Moore. I know he's a hometown boy and all that stuff, right? But Alex Iafallo is a number of things. He's a security blanket for Anže Kopitar. When all things go wrong, you can always plug 19 back up on that line. 19 plays left, 19 plays right, 19 mm-hmm. plays up and down the lineup. I think he's a great complementary player with Gabe Vilardi as well. And I think that 19 in the end probably edges you out a little bit over Trevor Moore. You don't want to part with somebody, but if you have to, that's kind of where I'm at today. I could change my mind in a week from now, Dennis, but I'm going to put an article up on mayorsmanor.com over the weekend that'll look at the salary cap situation and look exactly, sort of do some projections and talk about what they're going to have to do versus some of the options of what they can do. And we can get into some of that. Mm-hmm. I'm already on record with the Gavrikov deal. Do you want to give your thoughts on that? What do you think it'll take to sign him in Los Angeles? Do you have any opinions on that yet?
Yeah, between $5 and $6 million.
Yeah. Well, Drew Doughty, by the way, I had asked Drew during the exit interviews what he was doing to help get Gavrikov signed. And for those that haven't heard it, his immediate retort, his initial answer was fantastic, which is, well, I can give him $1 million of my salary. And I think it was as good as it was. 84's Vladdy's reply was even better, which is, I'm waiting for the check. So he's waiting for the money to come in. But everybody seems to, whether you're talking about McClellan talked about how awesome Gavrikov was right day one when he landed along with Korpisalo. And all the players talk about it. Mikey Anderson's talked about it. Matt yep. Royce talked about it. He fit like a glove. He fit like he'd always been here. Drew loves him. The whole team loves him. And Vladdy's talked just, you know, we had him on the podcast. He was all excited back then. He's still excited now. He loved his time in Los Angeles. Enough is enough. Let's get the deal done. Let's get that solidified. And then I think that piece has to happen before the draft, Dennis, because you have to get that contract signed so that you go into the draft knowing, because a lot of wheeling and dealing happens there, right? Yeah. So you have to get that all worked. You have to get that contract worked out because you don't want to go to the draft without having ink on paper for that contract. If you go to the draft and that deal's not done, I think that you're expecting him to walk the free agency and the deal's not going to get done. And now you have to go to plan B to figure out how you're going to plug that hole. You can't wait around because that's the first domino for the Kings salary cap situation this summer.
Yeah. And you'd have to, that plan B is a trade because there's nobody coming that's going to take top 4 minutes. So it would have to be a trade to replenish that. And it's a sore spot. Like that's the challenge is the second pair left side. You know, I don't think, if Gav left, I don't think you're going to go back to Sean Durzi on the left side. And much as he tried, I give the guy credit for trying and in the pinch trying to get in there. But I think that if Gavrikov doesn't come back, then you got to look at a trade. Is it, if it's a Sanheim or a Provorov, I mean, you could go down the list. There's probably 6 or 7 other names you can name on the left side. But I agree. That's the first domino either way that's going to fall, and that's going to really pivot off the rest of the moves that Rob may have to make in the offseason.
So Gavrikov comes over from Columbus. Thankfully, now we'll never have to see another tweet that talks about when the Kings make a trade at the deadline with Columbus, they guaranteed to win a Stanley Cup. So that ended. So thank you, Twitter. That's we don't have to see that anymore. But he did come over with somebody else. He came over with Korpisalo. Where do you land on the Korpisalo situation? Because the Kings have an interesting decision to make in goal. Is he part of that conversation, in your opinion, over the summer? Do you try to re-sign Korpisalo as well?
Well, I wrote a column on like a couple of days ago in the fourth period. Which Korpisalo are you signing? The 921 save percentage, almost sub 2 save goals against in the regular season, or the guy who flopped in the postseason? Who gave up goals at distance to Kane to tie the game in game 4, to Hyman in game 4 to win it, to Kane on the power play, and to Yamamoto for the series clinching goal. I would move on.
Okay.
I would move on from Korpisalo.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give you the counter argument, and it wouldn't.
Yeah, sure.
I don't disagree with you vehemently, but I'm gonna give you the reasons why you do sign him. I think that you could sign him still to a show me contract, which is low money, low term, and for a Kings team that doesn't have a lot of cap room right now, and that you don't want to tie your assets up in trying to get a goaltender. Like if you daydream about getting Hellebuck out of Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Right, you're going to have to give a haul to Winnipeg in order to get that. You're not getting him for a fourth round draft pick. So if you want to use your assets,
and he's in his walk year, John.
And there's another thing too, right? I mean, what are you really getting? You're getting 1 year of service. Yeah, so year. you could get a show me type contract on a low term, low dollar amount. And then I understand it's not sexy. And I know that you're rolling the dice a little bit because you're potentially going into training camp with three goaltenders fighting for two spots between Copley, Peterson, and Corposalo. But I like that. I like that actually, because I think that let me finish. I think that you can use that to your advantage, because Corposalo, he would be one, and now you have Copley and Peterson that are trying mm-hmm. to fight for the other one. And if Cal ends up going on waivers because he didn't earn the job in camp, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that means that no one's going to take him on waivers, and so you can put him in Ontario. You have to eat a little bit of the money, right, because you're burying the contract, and then Copley's your backup. If not, if Cal outplays him, you put Copley on waivers. And if somebody takes him, great. He already got half his money because his contract is signed with a signing bonus in July. And as a thank you for what you did to the organization or for the organization. And, you know, he moves on and you feel that you start the season with two. The other thing is, if you somehow worked a trade for Cal Peterson, and I'm not saying they're going to, but if they did, Dennis, then that's yet another reason why, look, you get Corposalo on a low money deal, and it might just be the safer of all of the different options. Now, if you get Gavrikov signed to a reasonable number, and then you had those assets because you need to move a Durzi or a Walker mm-hmm. or whoever you're moving off of your defense to make room for Clark and Spence, then maybe you have some assets and maybe you go and you go, hey, look, yeah, we might only get him for 1 year, but we're going to go ahead and roll the dice. It gives you a different option to be able to go out and do something like that and to move on, to your point. But again, it starts with Gavrikov. You have to get him signed first.
Okay, but what's a low AA? What's the – give me a prospective contract for Corposalo then.
Let me go in and look some numbers up, but off the top of my head, I don't know, $2.5 million. I mean, it's not four.
Okay, fine. So, but here's the thing. Are you going to continue to waste that $5 million cap hit on Cal Peterson? You're not trading him. Nobody's going to claim him on waivers.
Well, no one's going to claim him on waivers, so here's your best case scenario. Your best case scenario is one of two things, okay? Best case scenario number one, he's going to the World Championships. He's playing for Team USA. He had a tremendous tournament with Team USA before. He has a tremendous tournament with Team USA again, and it kind of reinvigorates people thinking, because, Dennis, we know this. Dean used to talk about this. There's always a sucker. There's always somebody. Yeah. There's always a GM who thinks, oh, that guy, he just needs a change of scenery. He's going to be great. Get him into my system with my goaltending coach, and you know, and he's going to be great again. There's always somebody that thinks that. They think it with every player, every year. It's just, it's crazy. The whole world looks at a guy and goes, no. And then somebody goes, yeah, that's my guy. And they tap him on the shoulder and they bring him in. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. What I'm saying is, if he has a great World Championships, one of your best case scenarios would be that somebody's going to be interested in taking Cal Peterson. Sure, you're probably going to have to eat some money, but you have to just figure out what are you better off doing. First of all, you're not going to buy Cal out this year, okay?
No.
The time to buy Cal out is the following summer. The way that the buyout 100%. Works, that's when you would buy him out. So you're either going to play him, bury him in the minors, or you're going to trade him. Those are your three options, right? So best case scenario option number one, because you don't know what the results would be of playing him. So if you're playing the odds of success, have a great World Championship, and then you find a way to trade him and eat some of the money that at least is break even on the way the buyout would work for the following year, right? Or you just go, screw it, I'm not going to eat money, and I know no one's going to take the full value of the contract, so I just have to wait it out one more year, and then I can do the buyout. That's like your worst case scenario. So that's positive scenario, or best case number one. Best case number two, Dennis, is that you just continue to instill confidence in the player, and that when he comes into training camp, you hope that he can win the job because the distraction of Jonathan Quick is gone. Whatever the mental hangups were, Cal has been quote unquote fixed and he's ready to go and he has a great camp. That's best case scenario number two. And Dennis, here's the problem with those two best case scenarios. Best case scenario, the second one comes with a lot more risk than the first one. So, you know, I'm a big Cal guy, but there's a lot of risk attached with bringing him into training camp as potentially being on the roster next year. It could play out, it could work out, but it could really backfire.
Yeah, but you can't, like, from a management standpoint, you can't have a $5 million goalie in the minor leagues two consecutive seasons. Like, if I'm them, I'm saying, okay, Cal, you're going to start as the 1B, and we're going to take it from there. Like, you can't put him in the minors again. I mean, what's the point? Like, that if you got to waive Copley, whatever. He saved the season for them. I get it. Whoever the other goalie is, he's got to be the 1B to start the season for me. That he's got to be. And John, they were a better team in the second half. They were better defensively. Like, it all goes back to Gavrikov again. With Gavrikov on the blue line, he's probably not going to face as much rubber. And I wasn't impressed with Korpisalo in the playoffs. I wasn't. Like, he was the second best goalie in that series.
So
and
let me
guess
ask
what?
You. Oh,
Skinner wasn't great. But he was still second best. That was my concern. Because if it's winning the playoffs, he wasn't a great goaltender in the playoffs, Korpisalo. But go ahead.
So let me ask you this then. If they signed Gavrikov and they did all their other roster manipulations, would you be okay going into training camp with Cal Peterson and Phoenix Copley as your two goaltenders?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. That's interesting.
I would.
That's really interesting. I didn't think you would say that. I thought
because I don't think that much of Korpisalo. I thought, okay, he was great down the stretch. The team played really good. And then he just, like, too many goals from, like, I'm sorry, Zach Hyman's goal should have been stopped. Like, without question, went through his elbow, went in the net. Those were goals that Peterson and Quick were giving up, and that's why they had to go get Copley, and they bring up Copley, and they had to go get Korpisalo. He gave up goals from distance. I don't know if it was the angle that Evander Kane was shooting from. He couldn't pick up shots from distance. Now, maybe that's because they have a smaller defense, and they don't have big guys like Edmonton has, like Darnay and Nurse didn't block enough shots.
Don't mention Darnell Nurse on this show. How dare you? How dare you?
All right. I just did. I just wasn't impressed. It's like he didn't do enough. Like when the money was down and you needed a big performance and he's an unrestricted free agent, he came up small for me. He really didn't play that well. And that's my concern.
Let me tell you this. If at the end of training camp, the two goaltenders standing are Cal Peterson and Phoenix Copley, I'm going to call it right now. That means that Cal Peterson is the number one guy. He's not the number two guy. Cal Peterson is the number one guy, and Phoenix Copley is the backup. They're not going into next season with Phoenix Copley as the starting goaltender. And again, that's not a diss on Phoenix Copley, people.
No,
so
not at
save
all.
Your tweets. Phoenix Copley, he deserves MVP votes for what he did for the LA Kings and getting their season back on track. Even Drew Doughty said he practically saved their season. Okay. All right. So getting to the defense, Dennis, it's the question. What do you do with the defense? Putting Gavrikov aside for a second here, do you trade Durzi? Do you trade Walker? I know that you don't seem to care what they do with Bjornfoot, but he is on the NHL roster because he's out of waivers. So either you trade him, right? But even if you trade Bjornfoot for whatever, right, you get something great back. It doesn't matter. My point is, what do you do with Durzi and Walker? How do you get Spence on the roster? How do you get Brant Clark on the roster? Do you put Brant Clark on the roster on opening night? Any takes?
I let him compete for a job, and if he's good enough to make it on opening night, then you play him. And you worry about waiving or trading players on the back end. Like, you got to put the best seven defensemen out on the ice, whoever that could be. And look, if they're going to make a trade, you know who's going? Jordan Spence is going. Not the other two guys. Like, Jordan Spence is going to go. So, like, Walker is a gamer. I love Durzi. He's a really good kid. He played both sides. I know he has deficiencies, but he ran the second unit power play. He does give them offense. He's not afraid to stick his nose in with John, with this team that isn't very physical. He's not afraid to stick his nose in.
So
I give points for that. I don't know. What I do know is they need
I disagree with you, though. You're telling me you're trading Jordan Spence over Durzi?
Yeah, if you want to get something back for value.
No, it's no.
More potential.
It's not about value right now. That's that. So this is
for the other side, for the team that's trading for these players. That's what I'm saying. Not from a King standpoint, from the acquisition standpoint.
Sean Durzi should have plenty of value. He's at $1.7 million. He can play the left side and the right side. He brings a physical element if you need it. He can run the power play. It's all the same things you just said, Dennis. Sean Durzi should be an attractive option. I'm not saying trade Sean Durzi. I'm saying he should be an attractive option if that's the route you go. I think you trade Sean Walker for whatever you can get for him. If it's a fifth-round pick, it's a fifth-round pick. You have to trade Sean Walker in order to make room for Jordan Spence, Brant Clark, etc. You have to, Dennis. You don't have a choice.
Okay. You need, but here's the thing. You need size somewhere on that. That's the other thing. On that third pairing, so you like Bjornfoot, you need somebody with size, like a 6'4", 220 defenseman on this team. They don't have it. And when we talk about the forwards, I'll say the same thing. They don't have enough size. Like, okay,
Dennis, you get, let's say you re-sign Gavrikov. And let's say that you go out and you sign a 6'4 guy to be the third pair guy. I don't care if he plays left or right, but he'd have to play left, right? Because you have too many righties. So you sign Gavrikov and you get this 6'4 guy that makes you happy. I'm still standing here asking the same question. Who do you trade off the roster? Because if you're keeping Matt Roy, you just left one spot open. You just named five guys that take starting jobs. You have Doughty, Anderson, Gavrikov, Roy, a 6'4 guy on the third pair. That leaves you right side on the third pair, and it leaves your seventh defenseman. And you have Walker, Durzi, Clark, and Jordan Spence into the conversation, and Bjornfoot. So what do you do?
I would trade Bjornfoot.
Fine, you trade Bjornfoot. You would still have four, and you only have two spots. I'll help you. Jordan Spence goes back to the American League because he's waiver eligible. Okay, right. Now you have three. You have three. You only have two spots left. What do you do?
There's an odd man out. Your choice.
Okay.
They're interchangeable, John. That's why.
Well, they're not. They're not interchangeable because here's where I disagree with you. I don't think that you can let Brant Clark come in and try to play for a spot. Because here's the problem. If that's what you do, if you sit on your hands and let him try to earn a spot, he screws you. Because what happens is he's going to earn a spot. And now you're stuck in training camp having to try to trade Walker or Durzi. And it's really hard to trade somebody during training camp because everybody already fixed their roster. So you're going to give away one of those assets.
Yeah, you are.
Or put them on waivers.
But is the team better?
Oh, sure. The team's better. I give you that.
There you go.
When I say he screwed you,
You want to protect every King's asset, John.
No, I don't.
You can't do it.
I told you to trade Sean Walker for a fifth. Trade him.
Okay, fine.
Trade him for a fifth.
Fine.
But tell Brant Clark that he has a spot on the roster, and then you're good to go.
Fine.
But John,
they need more size. Again, everybody's 5'10 and 195. That's not going
to
work.
In your scenario, they signed a 6'4 guy to play third pairing defense. So there you go.
I would like that. Yes.
Well, then, okay. So problem solved. We've solved the goaltending problem. We've solved the defensive problem. We've solved the problems at forward. All the problems of the world have been solved. Dennis, any last comments on the Edmonton Oilers series? Can we put a bow on it? Can we flush it? Are we done talking about the 2023 playoffs, and can we now on future episodes of the pod move on to talk about summer of 2023?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I think we just did actually, but do you have
any wait. The Oilers just scored another power play goal against them. Sorry.
I'm about to disconnect you. That's your final comment? Okay, fine. Anaheim, the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, Connor Bedard, next Monday, 5 p.m., ESPN. Bedard, McTavish, reunited. What do you say?
Montreal.
Oh, jeez. Really?
Montreal. All right. I'm about to disrespect the Ducks here. Nobody wants that kid playing at 10:30 at night in a small building that nobody cares about the franchise outside of Orange County. It's not happening. And plus, they need a coach.
At least you warned everybody that you were going to be disrespectful. Yeah. Okay.
They need a coach. The GM really, like, look at all the talent he's traded away, John. Traded away Lindholm and Raquel.
That was his job.
Manson.
He was brought in to do that.
John, go back and look at what he got back on those deals.
Well, he had to burn it to the ground.
He did.
They need a coach. They need Connor Bedard as the cherry on top of their prospect pool.
They need defense, though.
They
got outshot by 30 shots every game. They gave up what? The most shots ever? The most shots ever.
They were historically bad.
So Connor Bedard isn't going to move the needle for them right now. He's going to get buried down there. I'm not sure how long it's going to take Verbeek to get that franchise better. So I don't think it'd be great for the league if he played in Anaheim. The rivalry with LA aside, and I know you say in 3 years, it's going to be World War IX.
3 years. It is. It's going to be World War. Get ready for it. It's coming. It's coming, Dennis.
All right. Well, you know.
It's the left quickly.
Wing. The left wing one has to score more than 3 goals next season, too.
All right. You're still on that. Okay. I would like everybody to remember. I would like to re-rack all of your previous takes on Kempe, your previous takes on Velarde, and
No. I was the only one right on Velarde. You're Mr. Playing
with right on Velarde. Hold on. You were right that he was a winger.
Yeah.
You were never a big Gabe Velarde guy.
No, I said he's playing in the wrong position. He can't play two-seed pace. I was right. I was totally right. Okay. He's a 25. I said he's a 25 to 30 goal scorer on the right wing when he was drafted. I was right. I don't care. Yeah, I was down on him because they had him out of position. Just like they had Adrian Kempe out of position, John. They had him as a center. He wasn't a center. He was a wing. They moved him. And that's what you hope with Quinton Byfield. Maybe he's a left wing. Todd wouldn't even commit to the fact of if he's a center. I asked Todd, is he center or left wing? He said he's a forward.
Forward. I know he said that.
They don't even know that.
He has to be a center. He has to be a center. They need him as a center. They need his size at center. Anyway, all right. So we could debate that this summer.
Yeah. So
is that
anyway, I beat up Kempe for 4 seasons because he scored 14 goals for 4 seasons, John. Like you want to like people say, oh, you got to be patient. You want to be patient like the Adrian Kempe development 5th year. Like you want to wait 5th year for Quinton? No, you can't wait 5 years for the guy. It's great. They got an elite player. That's great. He grew into the position. But come on, you need more payoff. And that's the part of the column I wrote was they haven't got paid off on most of these first-round picks. And you look at the top 2 picks, the last 6 drafts, it's a mixed bag. So they need some more emergence. My point is they need more emergence from their high-drafted players.
I won't disagree with you that they do need more, and Arthur Kaliev needs to produce more. And next year, you're going to have guys come in. You're going to have Sammy Fagamo, who's going to come into the lineup next year. He's going to have to make something happen. You know, Rasmus Kupari at some point is going to have to make something happen. Mm-hmm. If not, though, they got what they got, and they're fine with Kupari, with what he ended up being. That's fine. He's a fourth-line player. He's a good defensive player. Not everybody is going to be a top-line player. They were perfectly happy with Trevor Lewis. He was a former first-round draft pick. You look at the number of games that these guys played, and if they get over 200 games, that's pretty phenomenal. But, yes, you wanted to make another point.
And just want your take on this, Joe. I just think on their bottom six, and I get it, like that third line could be really dangerous, but I worry about the defense on the bottom six. Like, I don't think there's enough, like, maybe a little bit more, like, you had Kupari and Grundstrom on the wings on the fourth line. Maybe you need more of a veteran presence. Like, and I really like Lizotte, so I wouldn't move him out. But there's just not enough sandpaper in that series that, like, you can't physically intimidate teams. Like, Edmonton never cared about the physical contact with this team. Like, what do you think about maybe a more veteran presence, more physical presence on maybe not the third line, but the fourth line?
Yeah, no, I'm all for it, Dennis. I'll be honest. I was actually very surprised that they didn't go out and get a third line center, third or fourth line center at the trade deadline. I was expecting that. I actually thought that Nick Bjugstad would have fit in beautifully in Los Angeles. And I do openly admit that part of that is because I'm a Bjugstad guy, have been since the draft back in 2010. I think that you need to. And for all the love that everybody throws at a guy like Blake Lizotte, I think you saw the challenges in the playoffs that he faced, and they do need some size. Yeah. They do need something more. But you were mixing up 2 things there, so I want to decouple them. I actually like that third line, and I'm not worried about defensively. Mm-hmm. I like that line. I like Fiala there. I like Velarde there. I think if Byfield could fit in there, that's great. I don't necessarily like Velarde moving back to center and then putting Iafallo on that line, but you do have a weird mix of guys, which is one of the reasons, again, that they need to trade one of those forwards. You can't keep everybody. There only are 23 guys. Mm-hmm. So if you decouple your comments, I like the third line. I like what they have to work with there, and I think they don't have it figured out yet of who the 3 guys are, but I like the elements. I don't like the elements on the fourth line. I may like some of the individual players. I like Grenstrom. You can like Lizotte, different things. But no, the fourth line has to be reconstructed. It needs some size, or it needs sandpaper, or it needs both. It needs physical intimidation. They were lucky when they had Brendan Lemieux that for that one half season stretch, he gave them something. But overall, he didn't give it to them. So for people clamoring for that and saying, oh, well, I mean, you should have, you know, kept Lemieux over McEwen. No. Lemieux was never the same, once he came back. And he was a middleweight, too. So, but I will say McEwen didn't do anything to impress
anybody. And he wasn't a great locker room guy.
And part of the issue with McEwen is probably, you know, coming off the injury, having his jaw smashed and reconstructed from Wilson, you know. I mean, I remember Alec Martinez talking about the hesitation he played with after having his eye socket, you know, metal plates put in there. So I don't know if that's part of it or not. But the point is, I agree with you on the fourth line. So it's not the urgent priority and that we talked about, like, you know, fix the defense, figure out what you're doing with the goaltending, figure out where you're going to play Arthur Kaliev, because you can't play Kaliev on the fourth line either. But look, the recipe for next year is, you know, rather simple, right? You have to trade the right guys, and that is going to be the next evolution of Rob Blake. You remember I asked Blakey, I said, hey, is the pressure on? Is this going to be a more difficult summer for you? Because he's been acquiring up until this point, right? Now he has to trade the right guys. Is it Durzi? Is it Walker? Is it Spence? Is it Bjornfoot?
Trade them for different reasons. Remember, he went through the trading permutation early on to get – The veterans have to go, but now he's got to go back. So it's trade, it's acquire, and now it's sending guys out again.
Well, it's trading the right guy also because you have to have the replacement, right? So 100%. If you're going to trade Iafallo, you have to be able to have somebody step in and give you that. Because remember, Todd's talked about this as well, that, oh, we need more from the young guys, but he says, I don't want to take my foot off the gas on the older guys because, well, he didn't say take my foot off the gas, but he was saying if Kaliev gives you 10 more goals, but Deneau regresses and gives you 5 less or 10 less, then, you know, you're really no better off. So that's where trading the right guys is important, because you have to trade the right guys that allow somebody else to come in and take that spot. Yep. Somebody else has to become Alex Iafallo if that's the guy you move. Somebody else has to become Victor Arvidsson if that's the guy you move. Mm-hmm. Somebody else has to become Durzi if that's the guy you move or whatever. So, you know, trade the right guys. I think you probably have to sign a right free agent, which would be a bottom six guy and or a third pairing guy. Yeah. Obviously, getting Brant Clark in, whether it's on day one or whether you send him to the AHL for 20, 30 games while you sort things out or he gets his footing under him or whatever, you have to get Clark in as many NHL games next year as you can. You don't want to call him up in March. You want to call him up no later than January, right? Yep. But if you can get 100%. Him, if you can get him in by Christmas, that's even better. You need a step up from Kaliev. You have to figure out what you're going to do with Kapari and Jad, because that's also there. We didn't even talk about Jad, right?
Yeah.
But you figure that those players are going to improve. And then you have to figure that one rookie, because of the salary cap, Dennis, one rookie's going to have to be on the roster and make an impact. So if Fagamo comes to the team, he can't just be the 13th or 12th forward that they have, you know, every night that only gets in 10 games next year.
Right.
He has to play. So you're going to need, from a cap perspective, this season and the following season, you're going to need some younger players to really have an impact. And maybe it's Brant Clark, maybe it's Jordan Spence, maybe it's Fagamo, but at some point that next layer has to kick in and emerge.
Right. While the core is still playing, while Kopi's still great and still, and Drew's still there, which this season it appears that way. Kopi had a great season. I don't know why Kopi wasn't nominated for the Selke and the Bing, but you know.
Well, Jared Stoll was certainly pissed off about that.
Certainly was.
You don't see Stoli fire off tweets like that very often.
No, never.
Hey, Dennis, this episode was supposed to be a 30-minute condensed playoff edition. We've doubled our time. I say we pull the ripcord and call it. That's episode 156. Are you good with that?
Before we go, I do have an announcement.
Oh.
One announcement, John. Air New Zealand through Auckland in September to Melbourne. We have booked the tickets for Australia.
There you go. All right. Off to Australia.
Yes.
Okay. For a preseason game. That's all right. Fun. Oh, good day, mate. Here we go. Okay. Exactly. Do they put umbrellas and drinks down there?
They will.
Okay.
I'm going to get a big coconut and put a big umbrella in it, one of the pool umbrellas, and take a picture and send it to you.
I think I have that picture. Well, I might be there poolside with you, so we'll figure it out. All right, boys. Episode 156, Kings of the Podcast. DB, it's been fun. I've enjoyed it, getting a little heated. It's been a while since we've had some good stuff to argue about.
Absolutely, Jade. It's time. It's the off season. It's the roster. It's the hot stuff. Let's go.
All right. Well, as soon as the Devils take out your Carolina Hurricanes, we'll have more to argue about. We'll talk to you guys later. Baby, I'm getting sick of all the cold and sun.